Welcome on in. It is a great Monday. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Brad Susmat with you on today's show. Stuart Mandel is going to be with us. Fox College Football Insider on a national view. The absolute total disaster that was Arizona State and Arizona. Paula Bovin is going to join us. News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist. Paula today is at Suns Media Day, which will be interesting to see if Markieff Morris shows up or not. We are hoping he doesn't. But nonetheless, it'll be interesting to hear from Paula. I know she was at the Cardinals game yesterday, as was I. So I'll visit with Paula on all those things. At some point in today's show, I've got to get over on Bryce Harper and what happened with Matt Williams. But obviously, the Cardinals is where everybody is today. And it's fine. I was at the game. The game yesterday was one of the biggest surprises that I've seen in following the Cardinals through the years. I felt that they were going to win. I think we all thought last week in looking at the Cardinals that they were much better than the 49ers. I didn't think they were 40 points better than San Francisco. And it was weird as the game unfolded. It was after the Tyrann Mathieu touchdown return, not after the Bethel one, but after the Tyrann Mathieu, there was like this dull roar of, can you believe what's going on? Can you believe what is happening? And then as the game got completely out of hand, it was one of those where you watch Colin Kaepernick and you said, if he worked with Kurt or if he worked with Dennis Guile or whoever it is that Colin Kaepernick worked with here in Scottsdale last spring, you might want to go back and get some more work. Because man, was he dreadful yesterday. When I saw the note that Colin Kaepernick is the first 49er quarterback with two pick sixes in a game since Steve DeBerg, it's back in 1980. I was in high school when that happened. The Cardinals are doing some things that statistically you look at and say, I never thought the Cardinals would be a team that you would look at their all-time record. Here's one for you today, guys. The Cardinals are 3-0 for back-to-back seasons. Last time they were 3-0 to start out a season in back-to-back years was 1923 and 1924. That's how bad they've been. And yet they're just breaking through on a lot of fronts, not just this year. You know, the Super Bowl year obviously was, in a lot of people's minds, a surprise at this organization that was so beleaguered, couldn't find themselves in the dark, had no idea what they were doing for, you know, 80 years or whatever it was. That now they've come full circle. And now I see them this year. It's a second year in a row where they've started out 3-0. We remember last year they went 9-1 right out of the gate. But they haven't done bleep. I love Bruce Arians. I heard the bite again. Bruce Arians said the same thing after yesterday's win to the team. We haven't done bleep. That may well become the logo, the mantra, the saying around the team this year. We haven't done bleep. And that's great because they haven't. It's in September. The NFL season, if you really look at the NFL calendar and how things play out, see where you are around the middle part of November. I'm not disregarding them doing what they've done so far here, being 3-0. I'm really not. But we saw how quickly it ended last year. 9-1 and everything going so great. And then boom, adversity. At some point, adversity is going to hit this Cardinals team. I don't know when that adverse situation or run is going to come. I don't know. But we're going to sit here on a Monday or a Tuesday or a Friday after they play a Monday night game or a Thursday night game, and we're going to have a discussion about what are they going to do about fill in the blank. You know, Andre Ellington was the big question. Oh, man, Andre Ellington's down. I don't know. Chris Johnson's been pretty darn good. Chris Johnson's been really good. So the running game is actually doing something. I know you're going to be the one, and you're not alone. There have been many that have pointed out, well, yeah, it's the Saints, and yeah, it's the Bears, and yeah, it's the 49ers. Yeah, and it's the Rams this week, too. The Cardinals are playing teams that aren't that good, but I think St. Louis is better. I think they're better. Probably the best team so far, in my view, in certain areas. I don't know if Todd Gurley is going to be effective or not. I don't know. They took out Roethlisberger. It was a low hit, in my opinion. Are they going to come after Carson much the same way? So as we're going through all this and all the numbers, you know, Carson having won 9 straight starts, That's the longest active streak in the NFL. If you would have told me that Carson Palmer would do something at quarterback on a positive end, more so than Brady, more so than Manning, I probably would have doubted you. But here's Carson Palmer averaging 40 points per game in the last three. So it's really something else that's going on here. The Adrian Wilson halftime ceremony was nice. I didn't feel like it was lost in the shuffle. I didn't feel like it was too long, in my opinion, and it was fine. It was fine. There was nothing about the Cardinals yesterday. I got there early, visit with some nice people in the press box, watched them go out and kick the 49ers all over the field. The 49ers are a team in transition. It's another way of saying they're not that good. I thought it was interesting. Tyrann Mathieu talked a little bit about how Anquan Boldin was pretty much done in the middle part of the game. You would never think a veteran like Anquan would just look around and say, we're not going to win today. So it's a good Monday on that front. Now I'm going to get over to the negative side, and this is going to take a little bit of time. We'll have Stuart Mandel from Fox College Football today, because the Cardinals, I can go on and on and on about them, but when you look at what happened on Saturday afternoon and Saturday evening involving Arizona and UCLA and Arizona State and USC, I cannot think in recent memory of a more disappointing showing by either team, especially on the same day. For whatever reason, Rich Rod just doesn't do well against UCLA. I don't know why that is. When the Wildcats play UCLA, it never ends well. But the bigger story was Arizona State. And Arizona State was a program that at the start of the year, Todd Graham said, this is the best football team that I've ever had here at ASU. In fact, Eric, you were there on Saturday night afterwards. I did not see it, but...
He did reiterate the fact that this is the best football team that I've had at ASU. And then he went on to say, that's my opinion. And then he sort of started scaling back a little bit on the comments of... You know, well, we're the fastest on special teams and our defense has never been deeper, but there are glaring mistakes and weaknesses that we haven't been able to overcome yet this year. That's
it's too late for that.
He sort of went out there again and then reaffirmed it, but then started pulling it back. And you just, like we talked about, Brad, you dig yourself a pretty deep ditch when you set the bar. You publicly set the bar so high, which he did this summer.
Well, there are those within ASU's athletic department that have told me straight up, we wish he wouldn't be so straightforward and talk such a big game. But that's who Todd Graham has been since day number one. I'm also of the opinion now that Mike Norvell is not on solid footing over at Arizona State. No matter what anybody says, there are people within the athletic department that are questioning what's going on offensively. I know that the play at the goal line was just a dreadful call again. And I'm not saying that there's anything imminent over there, but to say there's just the usual frustration, I would be not telling you the truth. It's a fact. They can deny it all they want, but it's a fact. There's people over there that are really not happy with Mike Norvell. When you look at how the program has stacked up nationally, remember, and look, it's just one guy, but when Kirk Herbstreit says something about a program being in the Final Four for the college football playoff, that's just going to put it to a whole nother level. And we've been stacking this and stacking this and stacking this about how great ASU is going to be. So then you have to turn around and say, well, they're not. And they're 2-2. The two wins that they have, neither one you would say was very impressive. Thus, the conclusion I have is Arizona State right now is one of the biggest disappointments a month into the college football season. There's no other way to put it. And if you try to sugarcoat it through your maroon and gold glasses, you are just kidding yourselves. And you're probably short-shifting the program. If you're going to be one of those that says all is well and everybody's overreacting, no, they're not. They're not. You don't get just absolutely annihilated, destroyed, embarrassed in every way, shape, and form by USC, a team whose coach was fighting, depending on who you talk to, was fighting for his own job security. So, you know, there's a lot there around ASU and U of A. I'll get into U of A further. Stuart Mandel is going to join us next. Fox College Football Insider, one of the best in the business. We didn't even get into Utah taking apart Oregon. We'll get into that. And then Paul will join us in about 15 minutes from the Sun. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. So let's turn our attention now to what happened with Arizona and Arizona State over the weekend. Stuart Mandel covering college football for Fox Sports and Fox Sports One, one of the best in the business, joins us for a couple of minutes. Stuart, thanks for jumping on board. The bigger disappointment to you Saturday night, was it U of A or was it ASU?
I got to say U of A because that was the big game nationally and a game that many of us, myself included, thought they would win. To lose by that decisive a margin to basically be out of the game in the first quarter was pretty disappointing. With ASU, I think there's bigger issues, and frankly, I did not expect them to win because they haven't looked like I thought they would even coming into that game. Maybe you'd expect a more competitive game against USC, but going into last week, I think the talk of ASU possibly winning the South, I don't think many people felt that way anymore, but certainly Arizona still has those expectations.
In Arizona's case, Rich Rodriguez versus UCLA never seems to go well. I know Anu Solomon gets knocked out of the game, but what was it about UCLA Saturday night?
Well, I think it was a different kind of game than some of the past ones. I think in the past, the offense, Arizona's offense struggled for whatever reason against UCLA, and you might say that they did early on with the turnovers, but at the end of the day, rushing for 330 yards, obviously they did what they wanted to do for the most part going into the game. It was the defense, it was the inability to do anything to slow down Josh Rosen and that rushing attack. And, you know, this is why UCLA has emerged as the team to beat in this conference, because they're great on both sides of the ball. They have such a good offensive line now that used to be a weakness. The freshman quarterback doesn't play like a freshman. And Paul Perkins, one of the better running backs in the country. So I don't think that that's necessarily an indictment on Arizona. I think a lot of teams are going to struggle to slow them down this year.
On the Arizona State front, I would have to say here a month into the season, they would go down as one of the biggest disappointments in the entire country, given that Todd Graham talks so openly about this is the best team that he's had coming back and the hype and buildup around this team. Would you agree?
No question. You know, I think the biggest disappointment in the country has been Auburn, and then I would put Arizona State right there behind that. You know, this is a team that I expected to be so much better on offense. And I think it goes back to a mistake many of us make every year when making preseason picks, and then we just keep making it, and that is to underestimate what it means when a team has to replace a bunch of starters on the offensive line. Because if you can have a great quarterback coming back, and I do think Mike Bertovici is better than he showed, you can have all the weapons, but if your offensive line's a mess, you're not going to go very far. And that's basically been the case for them.
And it seems to me that there's deeper issues going on out here around Arizona State's football program. Once Bo Graham left the program 2 weeks before the season started, ever since then, it's felt like they've just been off kilter.
Yeah, and not being around the program every day, it's hard for me to judge whether that issue is having kind of an effect on the team on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, I think in hindsight, maybe Todd Graham wishes he hadn't talked up the team as much as he did, because clearly they had some things they needed to get addressed, but they haven't.
In terms of U of A, so they go to Stanford this week. Last time those two teams played, Stuart, U of A threw the ball 69 times. I don't know about Anu Solomon, but it's a really interesting early to mid-season matchup, given that Stanford has looked so good in the conference so far. And U of A, after the UCLA bounce back, what do you think of Stanford U of A this coming weekend?
It is interesting because, you know, Stanford's done a bit of a reversal here. The last few years they won with a very dominant defense and doing just enough on offense. And this year, other than that first game against Northwestern, their offense is looking kind of what I thought they would. Kevin Hogan's a fourth-year quarterback, and it shows. Veteran offensive line, a very versatile weapon in Christian McCaffrey. I think if Arizona's defense plays the way it did the other night, they're going to have trouble. But at the same time, Stanford's very inexperienced on defense, and I think, you know, unlike past years, you can move the ball on them, you can have explosive plays, and we'll see if Arizona can turn around from last week and do that. You know, I don't expect a repeat of the turnover situation. That was seemed kind of, I don't want to say fluky, but it was kind of a perfect storm kind of thing. It's a crucial game for Arizona, obviously. Can't start 0-2 in the conference. And you know, look, if there's one thing we've learned in the Pac-12 so far, is there's no such thing as home field advantage. I believe the road teams are 6-0, and Stanford is not one of the more intimidating places you can go to play. So this is, you know, this is probably a game where the country is going to expect Stanford to win comfortably, and I don't know if that's the case.
And I think the nation would expect UCLA to take out ASU this Saturday as well, right?
That I would say, yeah. That one is you're not going to see any people take the other side of that one.
Stuart Mandel with us, covering college football for Fox Sports and Fox Sports One. I want to turn the discussion over to Pac-12 cannibalism. We saw what Utah did to Oregon the other night. A month in, are you expecting this to be the norm where every week we look up at the scoreboard and say there's just not one dominant team because everybody's destroying one another?
Well, I think what happened with Oregon was you know, a sign of something deeper there, real problems at Oregon. That really were there last year, but Marcus Mariota was so good that he hid them, and that is the change in defensive coordinator a couple of years, losing Nick Aliotti, who had been there for so long. That defense is a mess, and I don't necessarily expect Oregon to turn around from this and win and go 7-2 in the Pac-12. But you're right, you've got, you know, a bunch of teams now that are capable of beating each other in any given week. Utah, as good as it looked the other night, I think people still are hesitant to completely jump on that bandwagon and say, oh, I think they're going to win the Pac-12 now. UCLA probably has inspired a little more confidence, a lot mm-hmm. more confidence, because that's a team we knew was extremely talented. And really, my only question coming to the year with them was Josh Rosen, and he's answered that. But now they've got all these injuries on defense, and it showed against Arizona not having Miles Jack and Andy Vanderdoes up the middle. So, yeah, there's no one team in that conference right now that I look at and say, yep, that team is going to be in the playoff. And that could be an issue for the Pac-12 this year. I think there's a lot of respect for the conference. It's a tough conference, a deep conference. But is anybody going to make it out of there with only one loss? Because if they don't, they'll be in danger of getting shut out.
Yeah, and that's I'll end on this question then. With the CFP a month into the season, you'll be out here in January for the title game. Who do you feel certain? Is there a team or two that you're like, Brad, this team's going to be there? Or is it just still a complete throw the cards up in the air and see where yeah. they all land?
No, I feel much less certain now than I did at the start of the season. Usually you start getting some clarity. Mm-hmm. But everybody made me nervous in that first month of the season. Now, some of that is to be expected. Teams are working out their kinks. But look, Ohio State has not been this juggernaut that everybody thought it would be coming into the season. Doesn't mean they won't get it sorted out and take care of business. TCU's defense has just been so shredded by injuries that I no longer feel too comfortable saying they make the playoff. And even in the SEC, you know, the usual suspects, Alabama has issues. Texas A&M and Ole Miss have looked really good, but I think people always be reluctant to jump on one of these kind of new blood programs. So, no, I mean, we go into October here. Conferences are starting the harder conference play. And to me, all four of those spots are up for grabs.
As always, Stuart, appreciate the time. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Stuart Mandel with us, covering college football, Fox Sports, and Fox Sports One. The you know, the Sun Devil part of that discussion, you know, if you're an ASU fan, after this Saturday, your season is going to be over unless they win. That's it. You have three losses after this Saturday. And yeah, the schedule was brutal the first month, but when the coach says, this is the best team that I've ever had, and when you go out and not just lose, but lose in ways that you look at and say, are you kidding me? The speed on the perimeter, okay, when you're looking at just the speed that USC showed on the perimeter versus Arizona State, there's no Adoree Jackson. I get it. And you can feel very good about the players that you have. But nobody really pushed Cody Kessler. On the other side, all I'm getting is play calling. I'm getting people saying, where is DJ Foster? We don't see DJ Foster nearly enough touching the football. When you do have shotgun on the goal line, that doesn't go well with people. That's Missouri-esque. Eric, when you saw that play, you got a little smirk on your face.
It's funny how a couple, like one play really changed the whole complexion. That play, it would have been 21-7, okay? If Zane Gonzalez makes both of those field goals, even one,
right,
it's 21-10, maybe 21-13 at halftime. Instead, it's 28-0, and then Gump Hayes fumbles the kickoff with like 30 seconds left in the half, and they punch it in the next play or two plays later, and the game just, it ends just like that.
Well, and you also had the undisciplined play of Arizona State.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Demetrius Cherry gets a personal foul that was just a silly call. And I can, all day long, oh, that wasn't a, it, you know what, the flag was thrown. Sorry, there's no do-overs.
Yeah, I feel the same way you do. When you're near the goal line and you're set up in the shotgun, you're giving the defense a 3-yard advantage.
I mean, come on.
That's all you're doing. Put Burkle under center. It's first and goal. Have him sneak it from the one. Maybe you'll get to the half-yard line. Then you've got three plays to get a half-yard.
But here's the thing. So today, as negative as everything is around Arizona State, as many people are up in the up in arms about it, it's very similar to where USC was last week at this time, where everybody's just, we're done, we're finished, let's get the coach out of here. I'm not hearing that about Todd. There's a lot of people upset with Mike Norvell, a lot of people. But they just have to go to UCLA and win. And nobody's expecting them to win. Like Stewart was just great about that. He's like, yeah, that's not going to happen. Paula Bovin is next. Our guy, Markieff Morris. Did he show up? She's at Suns Media Day. The Suns start today. That is the burning story. Also, Paula was at the Cardinals game yesterday. We'll talk further with Paula. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, Paula Bovin joins us now. News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist. She is at the Suns today. She was at the Cardinals yesterday. And let's just start with the basketball first and foremost. Did Markieff Morris show up at Media Day for the Suns? Is he there within your sight?
Not in my sight anymore, but he was here. He did meet the media at the podium. He said, I'm not talking about the past. I'm here. And then he fielded a couple questions about only, you know, the team. Somebody asked him, do you still have faith and trust in management? And he said, that's a question you have to ask them. And that was pretty much it. And now he's no longer around here that I can see. But he was here. That's something.
I wish he were no longer here. That's what I would like to see. I can't believe we've gotten to this point, but you know, on the Suns side of things, they could make life really miserable for him and just have him sit out. I've heard this spin, Paula, in my opinion, that he was caught by a Philadelphia writer that he's known and he just happened to say some things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't buy that for 1 second. And this is like the biggest thorn in my side in Valley sports right now is Markieff Morris.
You know what? And for whatever reason, maybe I'm just so jaded from athletes covering athletes over the years. I'm fine with it, you know,
and really?
I mean, I'm not fine with how things have gone, and I don't like players to sign contracts to behave that way. But bottom line, I see it all the time. And even as Hornacek and McDonough said today, this isn't the first time a player has been mad at management. And while this dragged on, I know he's already met with the team. I sense things are okay with his teammates. I mean, God, you know, I think he adds a lot on the court, more than people are sort of willing to give him credit for. And if this thing can sort of be resolved among his teammates and he plays well, I don't know. I mean, I really still think this thing could work, but I'm in the minority on this one.
What about off the court, though? Doesn't that bother you, the off the court stuff? I mean,
yeah, I mean,
him
yeah,
and his brother just
does.
Were knuckleheads that day.
Yeah, but it, again, I mean, it's hard to comment too much on it until sort of there's this due process, and it hasn't happened. And you know, while it seems pretty ugly, it's hard to condemn him when this thing hasn't gone through the court system yet. So I'll resolve judgment until I hear more.
Okay, if we're just talking basketball, he's one of the most enigmatic players that I've seen. One day he's really good, and the next day he's 4-2. I understand that when you have Len and Tyson Chandler and Brandon Knight and Bledsoe and Markieff, that's a pretty good five. Pretty good. It's not a consistent enough five for my liking. I factor in his erratic play, and you can't deny that he's an erratic player. And I throw
in
the
I agree.
You throw in the off the court stuff and the way that he just kind of handled this whole offseason. And sure, there's been players that have been upset before. You're right about that. And I'm jaded too about it. I see guys that get upset with their contracts and all that. but he's not worth the time because he's never been consistent since he's been here.
Well, I mean, bottom line, this is the situation they're in. They feel they need him as a player. They are a better team, I think, with him, certainly on the court. And, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see how it all works out. But, you know, he's not getting traded. I mean, there probably were discussions, but that's not happening. And he did report. And so I just think this is the hand, to be use a really cliche, that everyone's sort of been dealt with right now. And now it's just kind of a wait and see what happens.
All right.
And I think, and I do think with Tyson Chandler, and I know you addressed this, I think he's going to be a better player. It's not the perfect lineup, but it's a far better one. And I think it's going to even free him up to be a better player.
Well, and maybe their thought is that Tyson Chandler can talk some sense and work with Markieff Morris and make him grow up a little bit. Maybe it's just been too much to ask Markieff Morris to be a leader because he hasn't shown any sort of leadership since he's been here. And
right. And
maybe it's a guy like Tyson Chandler, who's a pretty good guy off the court from what I've actually a very good guy off the court from what I've heard, because they haven't had a leader here. You know, they get away with entirely too much nonsense with this team. And
that's a great point. And, you know, we saw that leadership with guys like Nash, who, you know, doesn't have to be a real vocal guy, but knows how to make things work in the locker room and knows how to kind of get people on the same page. And everything I've heard about Chandler, you know, I think he got a little bit of a bad rap in New York. I think he was being vocal, trying to help the team, and some people turned on him.
It's a bad team.
But almost exactly.
It's a bad
almost
team.
Everything else I've heard is he's the kind of guy you want when you have these situations. He's obviously been around a long time. He wants success now at this age and everything else. So that's good. That's a good piece of the puzzle.
All right. Paula Bovin joining us at Suns Media Day. So the Suns are getting started. I don't know if they're going to be any good or not. They've got some pieces. Let's get over to the team that is good. You were at the Cardinal game yesterday. I was there as well. I felt like I was seeing something that I just couldn't. I'm going to use the late Jack Buck line. I don't believe what I just saw, because Kaepernick found ways to complete passes over and over and over to the other team wearing the other jersey. He was that bad, and the Cardinals were
right.
That good. What was your big takeaway from the game? Bruce Arians was, we still haven't done bleep, which I like that he keeps saying that. I love that.
Right.
Because he's right. It's September. They're 3-0. So what? They were 9-1 last year. Nothing good happened in the postseason. They got drilled by Carolina. So I agree with that. What was your big takeaway?
Mm-hmm. Well, two things. And one is what you just mentioned, what Arians said about, you know, and I heard what he said in the locker room after. It was the same thing. We're just good job, but this means nothing. And
right.
And the thing that struck me was that every player was kind of echoing that comment in the locker room afterwards. So they've totally bought into that part. The other thing that really took me back, yesterday, was how contributions were coming from all different directions, which really made me impressed by this team. You know, obviously it was the secondary. It was Bethel with his first defensive snap of the season, returning an interception for a touchdown. It was an offensive line that seems to be gelling and playing better every game. It was obviously Carson Palmer playing as well as he's ever played. I mean, it was coming from all directions. And that formula to me is huge down the stretch. But you're right. I mean, they're one really bad injury away from life-changing. So I think the, you know, tempering enthusiasm, at least within that locker room, is a real and important thing.
Okay, over to ASU. So U of A getting drilled and ASU getting drilled was the worst Saturday night that I've seen in a long, long time. Which was the bigger disappointment to you?
I think it was, wow, gosh, that's a great question, Brad. I mean, I'd have to go with Arizona, only because there were still some questions sort of unanswered for me. I kind of knew where ASU was heading, but I thought Arizona had the chance to really make a big leap, and I thought they fell flat. And I know they were dealing with injuries and other things, but they were not able to sort of rise to the occasion and on that national stage and everything else. So they were both bad, but of the two, that one probably jumped out a little bit more.
I believe there's much deeper issues going on over at Arizona State than anybody's willing to talk about at this point, and that the Bo Graham departure was kind of the setting the ball in motion to go down this path. It's not the only reason why. I mean, USC just had better players opposite ASU. But a week ago, there was a lot of conversation about Sark and his job and his future. There's no talk about Todd's future, okay? But there's people over there that aren't happy with Mike Norvell now, Paul, and you've probably heard the same thing. And I think that there's an undercurrent over there that's not good right now, not just on the field. Are you hearing the same things?
I would agree. I will also say that I think any talk about changing coaches or offensive coordinators or anything else is ridiculous because of what this team has achieved. You know, the one thing about ASU, and it shows itself against SC, in the past couple of years, they have done really well, I think, almost overachieving. I think Graham does a really good job getting the most out of his players, so they can compete with a lot of teams. But when you have a team like SC, you know, that gets four straight years of top 10 five-star recruits, number one recruiting class last year, even when they're, you know, there's probation issues of limited scholarships going on, and they still thrive, it's hard to compete with. So that brings, I think, to your point, this season there's some other stuff going on, and ASU can't afford to have other stuff going on because I think sometimes on the field they're not matching up maybe equally with some of the top teams certainly in the Pac-12. And I think the Graham thing is part of the equation. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a coach's son. I think that's one part of it. The second part of it is he was a very good coach, I think, more than people gave him credit for. I think people kind of thought, oh, you know, here's a guy who's, you know, the son of a coach who got his job. People have told me he did a really good job. So I think those factors together, sure, I think there's some stuff going on there, and that's something ASU can't afford to have.
You know, I had Stuart Mandel on about 15 minutes ago and asked him if ASU would be the biggest disappointment in the country, and he said Auburn would be one, ASU would be number two, and I agree with him. You know, are you done with Todd saying we have the most talented team and all that stuff? Because I know there's people internally at ASU that have been just worn out with that stuff. Where are you at on all that?
Yeah, I mean, I understand to a certain extent why he says that stuff, you know, give confidence to the team, fire up fans. But I think he needed to temper it. I think he needed to temper it this season. I think he's hurting himself by saying that. And I don't think it's true. I mean, I think, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if top to bottom it's the best team he's seen. But certainly this is an ASU team that maybe is not competing as well, you know, recruiting and talent-wise as some others. But that hasn't mattered in the past couple of years, like I said. But it seems to matter this season.
Yeah, this Saturday's game is as big as any game for Todd. They lose, they're completely out of the South, in my view, unless the South just mm-hmm. becomes cannibalism 101, where they all eat up each other, and there's three or four losses for the winner here. But this is as big a game as Todd's had since he's been here. If you go back to last year, they lose the U of A game. They barely hang on to beat Duke. They lose in an unimpressive fashion against Texas A&M. They play a couple patsies that they played around with and didn't really do much. And then they get destroyed by USC. So, you know, there's not much here in the last few games for them, even at the end of last season, that you can say, wow, they've really looked good.
Yeah, I know. It's a big game, and I frankly, at this point, don't see them being able to win this game. You know, obviously they've got a freshman quarterback, but he's as good of a freshman quarterback in the country, and talking about UCLA, as probably there is, at least one with the most potential. They're pretty darn talented, and to have to play in the Rose Bowl, that's going to be a challenge for them. So, I don't see things going that great for them this season, at least at this point. Maybe they'll surprise me Saturday, but it's hard for me to envision it.
Stay well. Thanks for the time, as always.
Okay, Brian.
It's Paula Bovin down at Suns Media Day with her buddy Markieff Morris. I shouldn't say it like that. That's not her buddy. That was a cheap shot. I shouldn't have said that. With Markieff Morris. Matt Williams is on my mind today. I don't know if you saw what happened with Jonathan Papelbon choking out the MVP, Bryce Harper, and Matt not aware of it. I mean, he's probably going to get fired anyways at the end of the season. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. I don't know if you saw over the weekend what happened in Washington, D.C. Matt Williams is not going to be back, probably. And I like Matt a great deal. We've had Matt on this show. The Nationals have completely folded. If there's been a more disappointing team in Major League Baseball in the second half of the season, I don't know who it is. Their bullpen hasn't been good at all. But yesterday, when you saw this play, I don't know if you did see it or not, Bryce Harper popped out, and Papelbon was, you can see him saying, why don't you just run it out? This is Jonathan Papelbon on the left, the closer, and he goes after Bryce Harper in the dugout. Okay. So this happened, and they put Papelbon back in the game. Matt Williams, questioned after the game, downplayed the situation, especially his decision to keep Papelbon in the game after he tangled with Bryce Harper. Quote Matt Williams, at the time it was a tie game. He's our closer. So he didn't know. I mean, it's a hundred. It's about 100 feet long dugout. Dugouts are like 100 feet long. And that took place all the way at one end, and Matt Williams is at the other end of the dugout. Okay? So I'll give him that he didn't know. I can't imagine that somebody didn't come down to him and say, hey, you have Papelbon out there. Did you see he just try to choke out the MVP of the National League? And so Matt was asked about this after the game was over. So later last night, okay, this is hours after the game is over, the Washington Post reports Matt Williams clarifies he did not see video of Papelbon-Harper incident until after fan jersey giveaway, and he spoke with reporters. Matt Williams was at the other end of the dugout. Had he known severity of fight, he said he would absolutely not have used Papelbon for the ninth inning. Williams said behavior like this is not acceptable. I'm livid about it. Now, Eric, we know Matt well, and we know how Matt plays the game. And when you choke out the MVP of the National League, or any player for that matter, I mean, fights happen. Matt's not going to get a pass on this one, I don't think.
Isn't it more telling that Matt Williams wasn't the one that approached Bryce Harper at the stairs
for
and said, why the bleep aren't you running fast?
Yeah.
Does that tell you pretty much everything you need to know about where the Nationals are right now?
They're checked out.
Totally checked out.
Totally checked out. And Papelbon has this is Jonathan Papelbon.
Mm-hmm.
His reputation is he is a loose cannon. I mean, he could close games. He's also won a ring.
But can you blame him? And if you see the replay, I mean, Harper, the body language was horrible. The shoulders dragged. I didn't see how far he got down to first base before the ball was
caught.
Didn't
look like that far.
He didn't really even get out of the box from what I saw.
Right.
So
was Papelbon right?
Of course he was. But Bryce Harper
is Bryce Harper.
Bryce Harper can do no wrong in that city.
Sure. So, you know, you see it here, and Papelbon is just giving it to him. And I don't know what Harper said. And, you know, this just should never happen. And it's something that happened, and Matt put him back out in the game. If all that was the chokeout, that's one thing. But then for the manager to put him back out there not being aware of it, and then not having anybody come up to Matt and say, dude, he just choked. He acted completely inappropriate.
In a perfect world, those two walk down the tunnel away from the cameras.
Sure.
And say, hey, let's talk about something real quick. And, of course, it would probably escalate, but
if it happened like that, it wouldn't have been.
But at least the video would be hidden. You'd see guys running down the tunnel, but you wouldn't know if it was just they could easily bury that. Like, oh, there was just a disagreement.
Sure. It's Randy and Gonzo.
That's it.
It's Randy and Gonzo.
But when it happens in the middle of the dugout at a baseball stadium where there are already, what, 50, 60, 100 cameras, someone's going to catch it.
So they suspended Papelbon today for 4 games. They're out of the race. They might as well. And they have him for another year on contract. So Mike Rizzo, the GM there, former Diamondback, is the guy that brought Jonathan Papelbon in. And now he's under question because they've folded. They have been a huge disappointment this year. So that story's on my mind as well. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. If you've not been over to Sports360AZ.com yet, we know we have a lot of people coming in, checking us out with the TV show now on Fox Sports Arizona. It airs tonight on Wednesdays and Thursdays. And with our partnership with AZ Central, we have plenty of content there. Our partnership, too, with Channel 12 and 12 News. Plenty of content on the high school, college, and pro level. Check us out, sports360az.com.